Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, IMF economist Axel Schimmelfinnig on the Fourth Industrial Revolution and its impact on the future of work in sub-Saharan Africa.
In 20, 30 years, Africa is going to be the only continent that is going to contribute towards expanding the labor force. For all other regions, it's going to decline. So yes, Africa could potentially become really the manufacturing house of the world.
Advances in technology are already shaking up the landscape for jobs in many regions around the world, but with its rapidly growing population, sub-Saharan Africa stands to be particularly impacted by the wave of technological innovation known as the Fourth Industrial Revolution. The IMF's latest economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa looks at how technology and other factors like climate change and trade might affect the region's job market. Axel Schimmelfinnig is a division chief in the IMF's Africa department and led this new research on the future of work.
So what does the future look like for these millions of Africans that are just now entering the workforce?
The truth is, we don't know for sure. But we can identify major trends and uncertainties to get some ideas of what's going to happen, what could happen, and then think through policy implications. Mm-hmm. As you said, the population in sub-Saharan Africa is growing, and the region needs to create about 20 million jobs on average per year for the next two decades. Mm-hmm. So that's the tall order. At the same time, the region, as the rest of the world, is looking at major uncertainties. We have technological change, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Will that help us do our work better, or will that do the work for us? We have climate change, which is a drag on growth and has impact on people in general. How bad is that going to get on the continent? And then there's prospects for global economic integration. Will this continue as we've seen over the past few decades, or is the current trend towards protectionism, trade wars using tariffs, is that the new norm? And that impacts the strategy that the continent will take. So together with a group of researchers, we've tried to think through these issues and come up with some policy implications for the region.
Mm-hmm. So the study, the research is very much focused on technology and how technology might impact jobs. But the region has the lowest connectivity rate in the world. How do you reconcile those two things? I mean, is it not like putting the cart before the horse?
No, I don't think so. What we're seeing is that technology is opening up opportunities for leapfrogging, developing new growth sectors, and making real differences for people's lives.
And when you say leapfrogging, what do you mean?
For example, the continent did not introduce landlines really on a great scale as you would have done in the US or in Europe. You went straight to mobile phones.
Right.
And you know, you can think of kind of very high-end technology, but you can also think of technology that makes things work on the ground. Think of mobile money. Right?
Yeah.
This is something that's coming out of East Africa. You don't need a smartphone. You just need a regular old phone, and anywhere you are, in the remote corner or in the city, you can transfer money to friends and relatives, or you can purchase your food on the market. So it's technology, it's fairly low key, but it has completely changed the way people are doing business, and it has given a lot of access to financial services to people that did not have that before.
Okay, so the technology will inevitably change the nature of jobs, but how do they get connected?
Well, parts of that is a policy question. So one of the messages that we're trying to bring out with the report is to focus on improving connectivity. There's a lot of focus on traditional infrastructure, roads, railways, electricity, dams, and that's important, right? That's what you need to get physical goods to the market. But nowadays, you also need digital infrastructure. You need to be able to sell your services to the rest of the world. And, of course, it's a big continent. Countries are very different. There are some countries like Kenya that are on par in terms of connectivity with what you would, for example, see in Europe. There are others that are lagging far behind. So making sure you use the opportunities and really, really push forward is going to be very important so that you don't miss out on the opportunities that are out there.
So the study, you use sort of three hypothetical scenarios. What's the story about those three different scenarios, and why did you choose to take this approach for your research?
Yeah. Let me start with the second part of your question. We turn to scenario analysis, which is what this approach is called, because the question that we're looking at, the future of work over the next two decades, is marked by very deep-rooted uncertainties. And I've talked about them before. So is technology, how will that impact the future of work? Climate change, how does it impact growth? How does it impact people? And prospects for global economic integration. How much can you work with other countries, or how much do you have to do things on your own? And if you have these deep uncertainties, a point forecast, which is what we're more kind of used to, it just doesn't do the trick. It misses most of the picture. Mm. And what scenario analysis does, it tries to kind of paint different futures in parallel. Each of them can come true, or elements of each of them could come true.
Mm-hmm. They're plausible scenarios.
They're plausible. Mm-hmm. So it gives you an opportunity to think through. You walk into the future to look back and then think through policies. Mm-hmm. So that's what we've done. We've done a scenario analysis exercise, and we've come up with three scenarios. The first one we call Africa Arisen, and this is a world where technology really helps humans do their jobs better, complements humans, and the continent leverages that. It really seizes the opportunities that the fourth industrial revolution brings to create jobs and foster development. Technology also helps to mitigate some of the impacts of climate change. So you get another positive there. And then global economic integration kind of goes back to the trend that we've seen before. So you have this deepening and the opportunity for entrepreneurs on the continent to really, really integrate into global value chains.
So that's a scenario with a fairly favorable outcome, right?
It's a good news scenario in the sense that the uncertainties play out in a positive way. That's not necessarily under our control, but also people are getting it right, yes. The second scenario we call Africa for Africa. So this is a world where technology has a more brutal impact on jobs and workers. Basically, things are done in robot factories. Mm-hmm. Everything's automated. So in advanced economies, in many emerging markets, that creates a push for protectionism. Closing up also means that the continent doesn't have the opportunity for pursuing an export-led manufacturing growth model as you would have had in the past. So faced with that, political leaders on the continent are pushing forward very decisively with their move towards closer trade integration. And they're also making sure that the infrastructure is in place to make that trade integration happen. And then all of a sudden, you have a market of 1.7 billion people by 2040 in sub-Saharan Africa. That's a sizable market, and that allows a lot of things to happen. And then the last scenario you would call Africa Adrift. That's a world where also jobs are being replaced by automation, and this whole export-led growth model and the investment in infrastructure to support that export-led growth model comes apart. So governments are left with an infrastructure that doesn't connect to a market because that market is no longer there, and the debt that they accumulated to build that infrastructure. So it's much more of a kind of unhappy situation, at least for a while. But then again, over time, you would expect to see that people on the ground will start using the technology and trying to create their own niche.
So you also talk about how a comparative advantage might work for the benefit of the region. Explain the concept of comparative advantage, and how do you think that fits in to the future of work?
Comparative advantage is one of the core concepts in economics, but as often the case with core concepts, they're a little tricky, but they're powerful. So let me try to illustrate it with an example. So let's assume both of us can bake a cake and make a decent cup of coffee, but you're much faster at both of that. So you have an absolute advantage. Mm-hmm. And in a way you would think, well, let Bruce do the cake and the coffee and everything is good. But if you're even faster at baking cake than you're at making coffee, and I'm reasonably good at making coffee, there's an option for us to trade and come out even better. So you specialize on cake, I specialize on coffee, and then we exchange, we trade, and the feast we have with our joint work is going to be much bigger than if each of us was doing its own thing. So comparative advantage is really about the specialization. What are you relatively good at? What are you relatively better at than others? And that gives you an edge. So right now, the comparative advantage that sub-Saharan Africa has is in cheap labor, mass production of manufactured goods. That's, for many countries, the development strategies, and some have made quite some headways on it. The question is sort of what happens with that over time. So comparative advantage is not something that's set in stone. It does change, and you can influence it. So how do you do that? How do you use the fourth industrial revolution to create comparative advantage going forward? And kind of just looking at the continent today, I've said a lot of the comparative advantage is in cheap labor, but that can still be kind of future sector if you want. You have programmers sitting in major African cities that are doing work for some of the Fortune 500 companies in the U.S. They're competing on costs, of course, but they're delivering the same quality work that you would get here.
So this growing population, growing workforce should work to their advantage, right?
Yes. If you look at just demographics, in 20, 30 years, Africa is going to be the only continent that is going to contribute towards expanding the labor force. Mm. For all other regions, it's going to decline. So yes, Africa could potentially become really the manufacturing house of the world, because that's where a lot of the workers will be.
Okay, so given the lack of available training and even, you know, basic education in many circumstances in Africa, what do you think the chances are that technology actually raises living standards in sub-Saharan Africa?
To me, that's one of the fascinating parts of the story. So exactly, we tend to think that to use technology, you need an advanced degree, university, ideally. But I think we need to ask ourselves whether that still holds. For sure, if you develop software today or you develop the next smartphone, you're going to have some serious skills. You're going to have to have done some serious training. Mm-hmm. But to use that technology, less and less prior knowledge is required. Like the whole idea of a tablet or a smartphone is that it's completely intuitive. You have icons, you swipe, you click, and all kind of without reading a manual. And it's kind of driven home to me when I look at my 7-year-old who builds quite beautiful houses in one of her computer games. She doesn't have a degree in architecture, but the system makes it possible and kind of taps into the creativity that she has. And that translates into the world of work. If you're a trader and you're using a smartphone for payments, you can now use an app that does a sales analysis for you that, you know, previously in a large company would have occupied a whole department. So technology is more and more designed to empower people, to empower everybody, even if you don't have a lot of formal training.
So if the region manages somehow to harness technology and make it that it complements people's work rather than replacing people with the technology, how do you avoid large portions of the population being left out in the transition period, which is likely to take years?
That's one of the big challenges, of course. Structural transformations such as this means that jobs are being destroyed in one sector and created in another sector. So in an ideal world, you would want the people in the sectors that are declining to move to the sectors that are expanding. If the change is very, very slow, you could maybe think of the people in the declining sectors retiring and their children starting work in the expanding sectors. But this technological change that we're seeing is anything but slow, right? It's super, super fast. So, question, can you help the people acquire the right skills for the sectors that are expanding? Certainly, you want to make sure that labor force entrants, the young people, have the right skills. But you also may need to think about your social safety net. Like, how can you help the people that either need to look at lower wages or are being laid off in declining sectors? How can you help them? How can you take them along? Now, the good news is that over the long, long run, past industrial revolutions have led to tremendous welfare gains. The question is, how can you bring everybody along and make sure that these gains are shared? And in economics, the concept that we're using to think of that is inclusive growth. So it's not just a high average growth rate, but a growth rate that really benefits everybody.
Axel Schimmelfinnig is a division chief and heads the Uganda team in the IMF's Africa Department. You'll find the study on the future of work in sub-Saharan Africa at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.